So, I want to look at breathing, and this is partly inspired by a couple of non-Buddhist-ish things that I've been digesting lately. I read James Nestor's book, Breath, which is mostly like physiology and neuroscience words for pranayama. But it's very sweet. He's like an innocent, explorer suffering, an innocent suffering explorer, which is a pretty good sort of narrator anyway for a book like that, and who like stumbles into things and he's like, wow, this is amazing, and he describes something, and if you've been in any yoga studio in the last 30 years, you're like, oh yeah, that's called pranayama, man. Like, we've been doing, people have been doing this for a long time, and he's like, it's amazing, breathe slowly through your nose, and so there you go. But it's marvelous actually, and just to read through it and to to also, just to digest some of the science behind it, and some of it, the connections of breath to the width of the palate, and how much air is actually in your sinuses, and how messed up our cranial architecture mostly is, and working with, as you know, a couple of the teachers that have been really important to me are Kitti Sarro and Tanisara. Ex-Forest Sangha monastics who now run the Sacred Mountain Sangha. They happen to now live close to me here in Sonoma County, which is just my good fortune. They spent most of the last 20 years in South Africa, where it was much more difficult to get to them and practice with them. And through a quirk of good luck and a donor who bought them a house to settle down in, they now live a mile from me here, and I can bike over, which is just really just good karma for me. So gratitude there. But they're wonderful, wonderful teachers, and they, in addition to all of the chanting and devotional information and practice they have brought forward, and beautiful connection to concentration practice and samadhi practices, the Forest Sangha practices, they have also been encouraging a particular short, like fast breath practice. And there's a lot of variations of this. The one that they are encouraging is of a variation of a common practice that's sometimes called double breathing, two short inhales followed by an exhale, and doing a bunch of these fast. And so the technical term is hyperoxygenation. So you kind of intentionally hyperventilate for a little bit, and in some versions of it, like the Wim Hof version, you do that and then you hold the breath. So, playing with those breaths has brought me back to the yogic pranayama practices that I focused on when I was a yoga teacher and actually taught pranayama class for a while. Really loving practices of, like timed inhales and exhales. Very strongly lengthened exhales, which correlates to deactivation and calming, and then breath holding, very long breath holds, and folds into some information from some other practices like the Buddhist yogas from the Tibetan tradition, which are also postural yogas, so taking postures, asana, holding more than just seated postures. But in the Tibetan practice, almost always doing these postures that are either postures or movement practices, doing them with the breath held. So taking a deep breath in a certain way, holding the breath in a certain way, and doing movements while the breath is held, or holding a particular posture like a twist or a fold or something while the breath is held. Very different from what we used to do in, modern vinyasa yoga practice that some of you have done with me, where there's a constant in and out flow of breath. Often quite a full breath, but also often a slightly constricted breath, depending on how you're doing the ujjayi breathing. I'll talk about that in some week hence. But all of this kind of breath play has been present lately, so I thought it would be fun to just start at the beginning and explore that a little bit together. And as I thought about starting in on breath, I immediately stumbled into this very prominent feature in how Buddhist teachers, particularly in Zen and insight meditation, Less so perhaps in some Vajrayana traditions, Tibetan traditions, particularly because that's the tradition where the stronger breath practices more commonly live. I ran into this thing where in the Buddhist system that I've mostly been practicing in and teaching in, there's very often the instruction to observe the natural breath without altering it. And then sometimes someone comes along, particularly like Tanisaro Bhikkhu from Wat Metta down near San Diego, who says, no, don't worry about that. Make the breath comfortable. Change the breath to make it comfortable. Have it be really pleasurable. And it's more important for the breath to be pleasurable than to be so-called natural. And yet, we get an instruction very commonly to just let the breath be natural and not try to make it be any particular thing. So I'm going to start there, and then we'll go afield from there. First of all, if we go back to the breath instructions in the Buddha's discourses in the Pali Canon, there's no mention of natural breath. I don't know of any phrase that corresponds to natural breath. What there is the beginning of the instructions in the discourse on mindfulness of breathing, or mindfulness of in and out breathing, technically, the Anapanasati Sutta. Anapana is in and out breathing, sati is mindfulness, sutta is discourse, the discourse on mindfulness of in and out breathing. And the instructions, there's a set of 16 instructions in four sets of four. And the beginning of that instruction says, mindful one, I'm gonna try to be as literal as I can, mindful one breathes in, mindful one breathes out. So the first instruction is bring mindfulness to breathing in and out. I think this is where the instruction comes to just notice the breath without doing anything about it. Just bring mindfulness to it. Then it says, breathing in long, one knows, in quotation marks, breathing in long. And breathing out long, one knows, breathing out long. Breathing in short, one knows, breathing in short. Breathing out short, one knows, breathing out short. I'm putting them in quotation marks because that's how it's spoken of, that's how it's written in the text, as if one is doing a kind of mental noting. So as the breath comes in, you could say to yourself, breathing in, you know, and if it's a long breath, breathing in long, breathing out long. If the breath is shorter, you could just note, breathing in short, breathing out short. So that's how the text begins. And the verb there is knowing, right? One knows breathing in long, one knows breathing out long. And then, so that's the first two steps, right? Mindful of the breath, and then knowing breathing in long, and knowing breathing in and out long, and in and out short. Then it says, then the practitioner trains, I will breathe in feeling the whole body. I will breathe out feeling the whole body. So the distinction in the verbs is that for the first instructions, you get mindful, one breathes in and out, one knows the long breath, and one knows the short breath. So that suggests that I'm just knowing them as they're happening. That's how it's been interpreted as a practice instruction. Let the body do whatever it wants to do, and I just notice whether the breath is long or short. So very often a natural breath cycle is like in and out, kind of medium short for a while, and then one longer breath that kind of resets, a little nervous system reboot, right? So some bunch of shorter breaths and then a longer breath. And so if I interpret knowing versus training to be knowing is the more passive or observational, then I could interpret that as just trying not to interfere with the breath at all. But there is a different interpretation of those instructions, and it could go something like this. It's important, once you are mindful of in and out breathing, it's important to know, to really deeply know long breaths, to understand, to be intimate with the long breath. That's the first whole stage of the practice. And so to know a long breath, do some long breathing. So you start off, and I'm intentionally now lengthening the breath, long inhale, long exhale. And I'm really understanding it. I know it. I know that it's long, and I know what it's like to breathe long. I can feel the energy of breathing long. And after a little bit of that, once I really know that, like once I've got that integrated in a certain way into my body, my somatic system, then I move to step two and I know the short breath. And so then maybe I shift to a different kind of relaxation. I soften the musculature, and now I let the breath be really short. And I know that. I want to understand that. What's that like? How does it feel different? How does it operate differently? And I'm doing the two intentionally. Then the third step is train to feel the breath in the whole body. There is, some of you will know, there's an old translation dilemma. It actually says, train to feel the whole body, period. It doesn't say the breath in the whole body, and that's a metaphor anyway. It just says, the practitioner trains, I will feel the whole body. Now, how do you translate that? What does the feeling the whole body mean in relation to the breath? So there's two traditional interpretations. One is, I will feel the whole body of the breath. This is the commentarial interpretation from the Visuddhimagga in the 5th century. I will feel the whole body of the breath, and that means, according to the commentators, the length of the breath from the beginning to the middle to the end. So I maintain my concentration throughout the entire breath cycle. That's the whole body of the breath. That's a reasonable translation from the Pali. The other translation, and the one that you know I like, is I will feel my whole body, my actual whole body. And the way that I do this instruction is that once I'm connecting with the breathing and I know there's in and out breaths and I've been with the long breath and the short breath, I then maintain that focus on the breath, but I add attention to the whole body, kind of the same attention that I began with as I was attending to the posture. So then I'm aware of the whole body and I'm aware of the breath. And for me, what happens when I do that is those two perceptions actually mix. So it's not that like there's breath in one place and then there's the sense of my whole body and I'm perceiving two different things. For me, and I've heard it's like this, or interestingly like this, or interestingly different from this, but in a, coherent way. For other practitioners, that when you bring those two perceptions together, what you get can be a subtle energetic sense of the whole body breathing. And I think this is a beautiful stage in meditation because it takes us away from thinking that meditating on the breath necessarily means meditating on the physical sensations of air coming and going. That would really limit me to like the nose, trachea, belly, system, the physical lung system. But of course, even if I'm feeling the breath in the belly rising and falling, I'm not feeling the physical breath. I'm feeling the movement of the organs responding to the pressing down of the diaphragm, right? The air is up here in the lungs, if we're going to be super literal. But of course, the air goes into the veins, it goes all through the body. If you get really subtle, you can sense something that maybe you could call, like some people call one of these subtle breaths that you could feel cellular breathing. I'm not sure what exactly we're feeling when you're feeling cellular breathing, but there's the sense, that the cells breathe, and that the skin breathes. And so you can connect to the whole body, listen energetically to the breathing rhythm, and you can start to feel this kind of energetic expanding and contracting through the whole body. So that's pretty cool. So that's what I think of as training in the third step. Back to the beginning, the natural breath. So there's these different ways to interpret the beginning of that sutta, the Anapanasati Sutta. And the interpretation that you could observe something without changing it became the standard instruction in modern insight meditation. I think this is also because modern insight meditation was influenced a bit by Zen and by the practice called Zazen, where one sits And attempts to just sit. So not focusing on anything. It's a kind of very, you know, wide open awareness practice. And you might often begin that with some focusing on the breath. But there also, and I got this instruction in Zen as well, the instruction was not to try to alter the breath, but just to really lay back and observe things as they are, things as they unfold. So I think, thinking about modern practitioners, I think this is a marvelous instruction to observe the natural breath in a few ways. A lot of folks who come into yoga and meditation and self-improvement kinds of inner disciplines, who come out of several different wings of particularly modern industrial cultures, modern fast-moving, accomplishment-oriented cultures, can come in with a baked-in attitude that we're trying to accomplish something. And I want to get it right, and when I do it, I'm going to do it strongly. And if I get an instruction to do something, you know, to a volume of 5, I'm just going to turn up the volume to 8 because I can. And, you know, I want to, maybe it'll help me get there a little faster. So, you know, the American culture that I grew up in is a very strivey culture. And I think the instruction to observe the breath and not alter it is not so much like, this is precisely how we think the Buddha taught it. I think it's actually a cultural intervention to try to tamp down some of that wild, like, ambition, strivey kind of energy. Like, okay, people, you know, if you hear, like, okay, just notice the long breath and notice the short breath, especially because people have been, even especially in the early days, you know, really drinking from a lot of different wells in terms of inner practice. So somebody might well have, you know, come into their Vipassana, you know, meditation retreat, and they may have just been on, you know, a yoga retreat, or, you know, for that matter, a holotropic breathing retreat, and they've been doing heavy breathing for the weekend, and then they've been in yoga and they've been deep breathing and holding the breath, and they come in and it's like, oh, it's time for breath practice, and they're like, I got this. And they're doing like big ujjayi, you know, breath holding. You know, you might have been, if you were in the yoga world any time in the last 50 years, you might have been inspired by, you know, the photo of BKS Iyengar, the great founder of the Iyengar yoga system. There's a picture in his Light on Yoga book of him meditating shirtless, and his arms are locked at the elbow with his hands in his mudra, it's flung back over his knees. He's got this huge barrel chest, and his chin is down against the chest, and it's like just force, you know, coming forward. And, you know, when I first saw that, I was like, is that what I'm supposed to look like when I'm meditating? Because I don't look like that. You know, this guy's got a lot more prana going on than I do. Maybe something, I don't know. And so I think people came into Vipassana and mindfulness of breathing with a lot of this other influence, the strivey culture, plus influence from yoga that has a lot of guided breath in it, plus influences from other things, Qigong maybe. And the teachers were like, oh, whoa, 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 people. Okay, how about just relax? Don't try to make the breath do any particular thing. And so I think this is generally a really good instruction for that mindset. But it does not need to be, I don't think it should be the entirety of the instructions. I think in a way that's a medicine for trying too hard. And once you've grokked that, I think then some other things are possible. And I had a little conversation today on Facebook with one of my friends who is a wonderful teacher in San Francisco of a somatic awareness form called the Alexander Technique, which is a beautiful practice. It, in a way, starts off pretending to be a practice about posture and movement and efficient use of the upper body, particularly. It focuses a lot on, like, one of the core exercises, like, how you get from seated to standing in as effortless a way as possible. It focuses a lot on the back of the neck. But like many of those somatic movement forms, it very quickly becomes a subtle practice in how we are intimate with the body in action and how much effort we're bringing to the various actions that we are engaging in. And it can become very meditative and, you know, very, it certainly requires a fair amount of mindfulness, particularly of energy and tension to do well. So we were talking about it, and my friend brought forward this instruction that's common in that somatic system and in many somatic systems, which is to observe a process, to observe something unfolding in the somatic system. This is core to somatic experiencing, for instance, which I practiced for many years as well. To observe it without interfering in it, in a sense, allows it to follow its natural course. So like if a tension pattern in the body comes into focus, you can't just like pull it in the opposite direction. If my shoulder like really wants to come up, you can't just pull it down and be like, down, boy, you know, and it's going to stay there. It's not. As soon as I pull my attention away, right, it's a pattern. It's going to creep back up. And so you have to somehow figure out how to be with the tension pattern, give it the information that it needs for it to complete what it's trying to do and unwind and come back out to a more released state. And sometimes that means going further into it, like with support. Be like, oh, where do you want to go? Where do you want to go? And you might follow it all the way in and be like, I don't know, I just kind of just wants to go there. I'm like, okay, let's be with that without trying to make it be otherwise. Because when I try to make it be otherwise, often what I'm doing is I'm interrupting a pathway that's trying to unfold. Right? In the same way that like if my breath is getting shallow, but I have the idea that it should be deep, I might actually be disrupting the natural breath. Oh, I think it should be like this. It's going somewhere, you know, it's doing something. And so I would practice, you know, really letting something find its own pathway and complete in a way so that it can unwind out. And so the instruction to observe something without interfering makes that possible. Right? My friend brought this up, so this is a core instruction, and that seems to suggest that the main thing you're doing there is not interfering. And what I came back with in reflecting on it was like, that's true. The main thing you're doing is not interfering on the muscular level, or you're not trying to make it do something else. But in order to even do that, I have to have some concentration. Because if I'm distracted, if my mind is wandering, or it's only going to the discomfort, or it's wandering away in narrative, the thing that I don't have is awareness or mindfulness. I don't have concentration. And so to say that awareness of something without pressuring it to change is the pathway toward release, I think that's true. But you have to maintain that awareness with some steadiness. And so you need some concentration, some focus to do that. You also need to be able to stay with something that's uncomfortable and stay, in a way, relaxed around it so that you're not adding further movement information into the system that's going to torque the pathway that's trying to unfold. And so with the breath, I think the same thing is at play. You can be working with the instruction to observe the natural breath and not do anything about it. But to do that, you have to observe with a certain kind of attention, right? So this was partly what our exploration was today in the meditation, is how do you actually watch the natural breath? If you watch it really closely, like you really try to zoom in and notice, for instance, if you try to notice the beginning and the middle and the end of the breath, I almost guarantee that if you're looking for like, okay, is this the middle of the breath? When is the breath ending? It's going to slow down. It almost can't not, because you're tracking its length. And so it's sort of like you're listening to it. It's listening to you. There's no it and you, you know, there's just a metaphor, right? Or just I'm not even sure how do you talk about observing yourself? The breath and the awareness, right, are in a little dance. So when you're observing it, there's some practice around like, how do I observe it with the minimum intervening gaze, right? So really soft effort. How do you do that? Sometimes you almost do it like out of the corner of your eye, right? Today, right before dinner, my kid had been a little antsy and bored. I tried to get him to help with a chicken coop, but the tasks weren't very exciting today in coop building land. And he wanted something different to happen. And he was kind of pulling on me and being like, blah, 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 let's do this. And finally he was like, just come inside. I wanted to like hang out and, you know, do a thing. And so I was like, fine, I'll change out my work pants. I'll come inside. So I went to change out my work pants. And when I came down, thinking that he had been in this like play with me, do something with me now mode, he was playing with some blocks on the floor. And my partner kind of gave the like shush mouth and then come here into the kitchen. And I came in and she said, he's been out of sorts for like an hour. And I just got him planted with these things and now he's absorbed. So don't startle him. Like just don't. And we just like talked quietly in the kitchen and he played with his blocks for a while, right? And it was like, observe him without intervening energy. Like don't startle the cat, you know, don't startle the kid. Because to go in and observe, even if I came close to be like, hey, what are you doing? It would alter the system again and it would jump out of the coherence that it had just settled into. And so often with the breath, I think it's such an intimate system and it's part of the autonomic system. It's really one of the most interesting levers in the autonomic system because it does its thing whether you pay attention or not. But as soon as you pay attention, it responds. And if you want it to do something particular like hold or go deeper or do some funny pranayama thing, it'll totally do that for you mostly. And then as soon as you ignore it again, it'll go back to doing its own thing. This is partly why it's interesting to try to notice the breath when you're distracted. And you know, I noticed like for that second half of the meditation, I chose a steady, slightly volitional breath, slightly deeper breaths in and out, slightly longer exhales, which is a breath pattern that I just love. It's really calming. I can get focused on it. So I was focused on it a little bit. I was trying to use as little effort as possible. And then I noticed that my mind had wandered and it had been wandered for a little while. And then I tried to do the thing I suggested to you doing, which is before I came back, I tried to notice like, oh, what's my breath doing? And it had gotten a little shallower, which is to be expected because I was pulling it to be long. But also it got a little more ragged. What's the term? Like a little bit wobbly or thin in a certain way. And I noticed that. I was like, oh, that's interesting. And then I noticed that the front of my chest and diaphragm had just like collapsed slightly, this little like sinking. And so then the lungs weren't quite as full. I said, oh, look at that. You know, and I could only notice it like that for like a couple moments, because as soon as I did, you know, the breath came back into its fullness, right? And then I was back in my even without thinking like, now I will guide the breath to be full again. I didn't even really have to do that. It just came back fuller. I automatically set up. It's meditation training for you. And so we have this interesting relationship between this breath that does itself, how we observe it, how much force we observe it with, and then when we choose to step in with a guiding hand and say, okay, well, let's have a longer exhale now. I think that'll be really helpful for calming. I want the feeling that comes with a longer exhale. Let's do that. And then how you step in and put your hands in the wheel. I don't know if any of you have tried the new driverless cars. I got an invite to them in San Francisco. And I'm sort of scared, but my friend said it's totally fine, kind of weird. But you know, I imagine at least that if you need to, you can put your hand on the wheels and do something. And so I think with the breath, it's like, oh, you can ride this driverless car, this driverless breath around. It just does itself, takes you through your day. It gets shorter or sharper or stronger when you need to do something important, like run to catch the bus or jump out of the way of your kid swinging a sword, whatever it is. And then it calms down when you get to calm down. Or you can step in and just begin actually to shape it. So I'm gonna loop back just a bit here to the instruction then, the open awareness instruction, the natural breath instruction, a variety of instructions that suggest that we observe without intervening. And to just land that what we're doing there is there's a process going on, whatever the object of that meditation is, that we are observing without intervening. Like maybe we're not trying to direct our attention to one thing if we're doing open awareness practice, or we're trying to observe the breath without altering it if we're doing natural breath practice. But that while we do that, that doesn't mean we are employing no effort at all. And it doesn't mean that there's not even perhaps quite strong concentration. What we need to do is really stabilize the awareness posture or the position of the witness, and then we can observe. And I think what helps here is if we make the stronger an anchor we have into the seat of awareness or the witness seat, the easier it is to have our hands off whatever we're observing. So if I want to observe the breath and let it really do its own thing, often what I'll do is, and for me it feels spatial, so I'm going to give a spatial kind of description here. For you, it might happen in a different channel. For me, it feels a little bit like I step back from the body that's breathing, and I root myself. I think it's because I relate the non-intervening witness posture with the parallel in eyesight, which is dilating your focus to a wide peripheral vision where you're not focusing on any one thing, but you're seeing as wide a space as possible equally. So I'm attending just as much to what's out here as to what's in here. So that's fun in and of itself to play with. You can do it right now. You could focus on one spot and then let go of that and really take in the whole visual field. That can be a model for what we're doing with attention, where you can zoom in on the breath. I'm paying attention just to the breath at the nose tip or the back of the throat or the chest or the belly. And then I can zoom attention out to a panorama. This is really, I think, what we're doing when we do is one form of open awareness practice. So there's sounds and there's sights, and there's the breath moving. And I'm trying to not pay attention to any one thing. And because of that, I'm not looking directly at the breath, but I'm not unaware of what it's doing. And that works best if I can really sit solidly in that place. And that means having some concentration. I'm concentrating on the continuity of awareness and keeping the sensory field wide. I think this turned into a very technical talk. So, forgive me if you came for existential philosophy. There's always more of that. But for now, the technicality is back up, widen, and then make that really solid. So, like, how do you get undistracted in a field where you're accepting all information? Right? What is distraction if all comers are welcome? I think distraction is when a couple things happen. One is thinking comes in and I don't notice it, and so I end up lost in story. And so what I actually did was my awareness field narrowed to the story. I didn't notice it. I think mostly distraction is going to involve a narrowing, not a broadening. It's actually a bit difficult to maintain broad awareness. So something comes up in the field. I hear something, I think something, I feel a sensation, and attention goes there, that's actually a narrowing of the attentional field. And so if I can keep that open, I'm concentrating on something. And so as you practice with that, see if you can find out, feel into what actually is the object of concentration when you're in that kind of open awareness field. What exactly are you stabilizing with? Because you are stabilizing with something. It can't be maintained without an anchor. You're not maintaining a perceptual anchor in the usual way, like I'm looking at something or hearing something, but there is an anchor, right? And maybe it's just, you know, this thing that has a big highfalutin name, pure awareness, pure. I don't know what pure means, but there's something that you can anchor into there that allows you to not intervene in something autonomic like the breath. You can observe it. And even when you're doing that, you can still have, you know, it's not all or nothing. It's not like laser focus versus wide. There's going to be places in there. There might be a sweet spot in there where you're like, oh, I'm mostly hanging back. But of all the things that are in the field, the breath is slightly foreground for me, or it's slightly brighter. Right? And what's that like? How does that move or shift your sense of the breathing? And that's actually a beautiful space, that zoomed out or panoramic awareness space. That's actually a beautiful space to slide into that third instruction, to train in feeling the whole body, because you can actually sense, oh, the whole field of the body. I'll do it, and I'll try to even sense like the field around the body, maybe 2 or 3 feet out, the kind of energetic halo, this sphere around the body. Feel that, and the body, and the moving breath, and all the sensory information coming in, and the flickering of thought, and the emotional tone and mood, all as a kind of scintillating, you know, like, I want the right metaphor here, simile, I don't know, I'm gonna say disco ball of experience. That's not quite right, but you know, it's fun to say. A shimmering kaleidoscope is probably more like it, of sensation and feeling and information. And you can just let the breath come a little bit to the foreground in there, right? And just notice what it's like to do that. And you may well notice that the breath gets shorter, actually. Because often what happens, if I'm not focusing on some particular thing that I'm doing or paying attention to, often what will happen is that the musculature will relax. Because I'm not doing one thing. I'm not focusing on the belly or the chest or something. And when the musculature relaxes, the diaphragm doesn't pull as hard. Calm starts to happen, so I don't need as much oxygen. And I don't feel like I need as much oxygen, so I don't breathe as heavily. There's deactivation is happening through the nervous system, and that's going to tend to lead to a softer breath. And this soft breath can actually be a beautiful doorway into concentration, a very relaxed kind of concentration, where you're not zooming in, but you're also resisting the pull of distraction. You're not letting the attention snap into a fantasy or other mental object.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.